Support comes from St. Louis Public Library Foundation, helping the library serve children and their families with programs and services needed to become lifelong readers. More information about the foundation is at slpl.org.
This is St. Louis on the Air from St. Louis Public Radio. I'm Elaine Cha. In late summer and early fall of 2014, the fatal shooting of Michael Brown Jr., an 18-year-old black teen, by white Ferguson police officer Darren Wilson, sparked widespread civilian protest. Then Missouri Governor Jay Nixon established the Ferguson Commission in mid-November that year to look closely into police misconduct and examine disparities in economic opportunity, education, governance, and law enforcement. The results of the commission's work were released 10 years ago yesterday. Its landmark report, titled Forward Through Ferguson, A Path to Racial Equity, presented 189 calls to action, as well as recommendations to address issues the commission identified as root causes of disparity in the St. Louis region. The Ferguson Commission report also called for the creation of a nonprofit named after its report, Forward Through Ferguson. Anissa McCaskill is the executive director of that organization. She joins us now to discuss its work, where the St. Louis region stands on the commission report's action items, and what challenges Forward Ferguson faces as it pushes along the path toward racial equity. Anissa, welcome to St. Louis on the Air.
Thank you for having me.
And before we begin, a quick transparency note. I've previously contributed to and collaborated with Forward Ferguson, most recently in 2019. So Anissa, per the Ferguson Commission report, what was Forward Ferguson created to do?
We have several tasks from the commission, one of which is to keep the document alive, to make sure that we are tracking and that everyone is informed about the 189 calls to action, and to also act as an intermediary, to be a holder of accountability for those in positions of power, but also be a partner in empowerment in the community.
Mm-hmm. Why was a new nonprofit necessary?
There was no one doing the work. When you have this much of community coming together, stating that these are the things that we want to have happen, and there's no place to put that work and that accountability and that tracking and that policy partnership, something new had to be created.
Now, the word catalyst has been a key term that is used to describe Forward Through Ferguson's work, what the people are doing. What change with regard to the commission's 189 calls to action has Forward Through Ferguson catalyzed, specifically around capital P policy?
I think the most recent that probably jumps to mind and that we've gotten a lot of questions about more recently, there are probably two. One being the Transforming 911 document that spoke to the infrastructure, or rather the lack of investment in infrastructure with our emergency response systems, particularly 911. And, you know, with the tornado that happened in May, we received a lot of questions about that. That was a document that we issued not knowing that we were going to have a generational natural disaster in St. Louis. The other that definitely comes to mind, it comes up over and over again, is equity indicators, which was published in 2018 and gave measurement and a grade on a scale of zero to 100 of where we were as a region. I think we came at about 42-45%, which I think was alarming to people to see it in a percentage. But when you look at that measurement, it gave a good baseline and a good idea of where we were as a region, not just in light of what happened with Michael's death, but just generally in education and housing and where we were in economic mobility, where we are with criminal justice reform. And it allowed us to see what other work needed to be done when you look at that as a prism for the 189 calls to action.
Mm-hmm. What about lowercase p policy? What kind of change has Forward Through Ferguson been able to catalyze in that category?
In terms of policy, we sit at the table in coalition with several other organizations, but the document talks about the necessity for justice reform. So we've seen a shrinking of municipalities utilizing community in order to budget. So traffic stops, the closing of the workhouse, while we were not the direct catalyst for that, our work in policy informed those types of decisions. Then you have the creation of the Children's Educational Savings Fund by the City of St. Louis's Treasurer's Office. That's a direct mandate that came out of the Ferguson Commission, and the work that was done by my predecessor, David Dwight IV, informed a lot of the work that was being done with the school board, as well as out in community, to see the importance of education, self-guidance of education within the City of St. Louis, and then also where the gaps were in terms of education as well in the region.
Mm-hmm. Now, roadblocks are something that are going to inevitably come up with any effort, and the commission report recognizes that. What roadblocks have come up in the past decade? You were just talking about some of the wins, about the equity indicators. That was in 2018. Mm-hmm. So what kinds of hurdles have you all had to face?
Updating the indicators. You know, we've made attempts and we've sought funding and partnership in order to do that update. A lot of things have happened since then. We've been through a global pandemic. We've had a change in the conversations that we're having nationally around race and equity. Equity is now being termed as a bad word. So where are we now compared to where we were in 2018? We have not been able to do that measurement other than, you know, as a one-off or like a snapshot, but to do a full view of it, we have not been able to do that. One of the other things that comes to mind is the fact that while we have informed and worked on police reform and updates to how we deal with our criminal justice systems regionally, it's uneven. We haven't seen necessarily the type of reform that we would like to see, and it has not been consistent, and it's often informed by who is in office versus who is not in office, what relationships are present, as opposed to just being consistently done in a progressive way that benefits everyone.
Mm-hmm. To what degree have those roadblocks impacted Fort Worthy Ferguson's day-to-day work, if not some of its short-term goals?
I think there's a lot of pivoting and work to find other things that inform the 189 calls to action. It has caused us to our benefit, really lean into the commission's mandate for the Racial Healing and Justice Fund and to try to catalyze, there's that word again, right? Relationships with those in community who are doing the work when the large P of policy can't be done through relationships or through pressure. We've been able to shift and work directly with community through the fund and then also through some of our smaller works that we've done. At the end of last year, we did a small retrospective on the four areas that the commission looks at, you know, justice for all, youth at the center, racial equity, and opportunity to thrive, the snapshot of what's happened over the last 10 years. And now we're working with the Urban Institute on a 10-year retrospective of the Ferguson Commission's report that it has involved some community surveying as well as some community interviews by some of the same team that informed and worked on that original report that we hope to have later in the fall available for community to have a discussion that will inform us how far we've come, what those gaps are, and if some of those priorities have now changed, because it's been 10 years.
Returning to the indicators, Anissa, whose responsibility is it to update those indicators? I mean, is it Forward Through Ferguson?
We take the responsibility because we were at the table for that original document. And we had great thought partnership with the City of St. Louis as well as with United Way. But that is very much a document that we have taken responsibility of and have largely held. And most people see that as our document. And so we don't shy away from having that responsibility to update it, which is why we have sought to be able to have a resource to update it as well.
Mm-hmm. And what are we talking about as far as what is necessary regarding resources in order to do that update?
Hard numbers, you know, we have looked at anywhere from $50,000 to $100,000 because you have staff time and staff salary, but then there's like surveying, there's convening of individuals, there are interviews, then you have to be able to print it, website it, all of those things. So we've looked at different cost for it. I think one of the lower ranges that we've looked at was around $20,000 to $25,000, but that would be a very streamlined process.
Mm-hmm. That is a big chunk of money.
Mm-hmm.
And for a company or an organization mm-hmm. of your size, that is a large challenge. What kinds of partnerships would be necessary in order to cover that?
We have spoken to several different foundations, but at this point we're also trying to figure out and come up with a mechanism for a community to assist with the cost of that or to make that investment, because it is something that is to the benefit of all community. Also looking to see what partnerships there may be outside of St. Louis, because it is such a tight area. And then honestly, there are so many other things that are taking priority right now with the response to the tornado, with all of the things that are going on. It's very difficult to say, give us money for this report, which does benefit and probably inform the responses that are necessary to really build up the North Side and the West End. But we also know that priorities have shifted quite a bit locally, and it's very difficult to necessarily get the full amount necessary. So it may be a cobbling of several different resources locally, individually, as well as nationally, in order to get the type of money that we need in mm-hmm. order to do the report.
Anissa, last week, the St. Louis Business Journal, speaking of money, mm-hmm. reported on layoffs mm-hmm. at Fort Worth Ferguson, and that was a change that affected three of its now former staff. How much of that is about what is in the bank right now, and how much of it is about challenges that exist for sustained funding of racial equity work, especially given the current political climate?
I think it's both. So we're fortunate that we do have some money in unrestricted funding. But with the shift in national priority as well as local priority and partnerships for organizations that are working in racial equity, inclusivity, social justice, platforming, the priority and the monetization is just not there for organizations like ours. So in order to be able to withstand the current climate, to get ourselves through next year, to get us through even into 2027, and hopefully hold our heads down and ride out the storm, this is what we had to do in order to have future sustainability to do this work.
Mm-hmm. In brief, what are the top two priorities for the next 4 years? And I have chosen that number because it's through the halfway point too, and 10 years from 2039, which was set as
a priority or generational shift.
Right, right. So
I would say equity indicators, to be able to have that snapshot, but then also truly getting the Racial Healing and Justice Fund launched as an endowed fund. We went through a cycle of a pilot that allowed us to put over $1 million into the hands of over 70 organizations that were doing the work of the 189 calls to action. So what does it look like to have a fully endowed fund that is able to pour capital, resource, mentorship, partnership, and community support behind the fund to keep that work going, because what we know is that as they do this work, it ripples out into community and their work influences others. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to get equity indicators funded so we can have that snapshot and see where the gaps are and what may have shifted during this period of time, good, bad, or even stagnation, as well as having the fund up and going to empower community, because the document and our organization came from community. So to be able to have a mechanism of the report up and going, endowed, and allowing community to continue to do its work, because several of the people who were funded had never received funding because traditional philanthropy just was not a fit for them, whereas this allowed people who were maybe doing work out of their homes or struggling to even get the 501c3 up and going the ability to do so.
Mm-hmm. The Ferguson Commission report states that the commission's work, quote, shows that we have a responsibility to seek and demand change from accountable bodies mm-hmm. named in the report. Anissa, who is that we? And what is Fort Worth Ferguson's responsibility in that larger push for change?
I think that the we is all of us. And when I say all of us, it is foundations, it is nonprofits, it is your average citizen, it is your religious institutions, all of those accountable bodies that are listed in the commission report, that is we. Where Ferguson, where the Forward Through Ferguson staff and organization falls is that we are responsible for, one, making sure that we understand that we is all of us, but then also that when it's necessary, we apply the pressure necessary for policy and to those who have seats in power, but that we also have the ability to bring those who often feel disenfranchised and left out of policy discussions, structural change, the ability to come to the table, and that we can push away once those connections are made between the two.
Mm-hmm. And very briefly, what is it that convinces you that this is a storm to ride out as opposed to a long-term, you know, permanent reality?
You know, I move from the space that anytime there has been movement by people, particularly by people who are collective in voice, and that's what I'm seeing on a more daily basis, that people who had never spoken are speaking now. Just like 10 years ago, 11 years ago, people who had never participated in public process now know that government entities are accountable. And so I have enough faith in the people that I call my neighbors that they will not sit still and allow what we're going through now to continue silently. So I have enough faith in community that if we hold our heads down and do our work and stay consistent in our work and in our voice, that we can ride through it together.
Anissa McCaskill is the executive director of Forward Through Ferguson, the nonprofit created by the Ferguson Commission after the release of its landmark report 10 years ago. We need to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about what's changed and what remains to be done since the Ferguson Commission's report release in September 2015. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio.
This is St. Louis Public Radio. Support comes from Parrott Corporation, a contractor with over four decades of shaping the St. Louis landscape. More at Parrott.com.
Welcome back. Let's return to our conversation about areas of progress and work yet to be done since the release of the Ferguson Commission report 10 years ago. Before the break, we spoke with Anissa McCaskill, executive director of Forward Through Ferguson, the nonprofit formed out of the commission report to keep the report's calls to action for racial equity front and center in the St. Louis region. STLPR reporter Chad Davis joins me now to talk through his insights from his reporting about the Ferguson uprising and many things thereafter. Chad, welcome back to the program.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
What is it that struck you listening to Anissa talk with me earlier?
Well, I think one of the big things that she mentioned and one of the things that we've seen over the last 10, 11 years or so is that there has been a lot of community support, that a lot of people, you know, outside of necessarily, you know, politics or politicians and such and other organizations have really kind of filled in the void in trying to get certain policies or getting certain types of changes and reforms done throughout the St. Louis area. She talked a lot about community, whether it's through the Racial Healing and Justice Fund or just in general, that the lowercase p that she was talking about as well. And I think that we've seen a lot of that happen over the past 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Now, Chad, you were the host of a special mini season of We Live Here, looking back at 10 years since the killing of Mike Brown, mm-hmm. And the Ferguson uprising, you know, the movement. What is it that came out of that specifically? You know, the kinds of conversations that you had with people, the observations that you made about that community level change that's important to be thinking about.
Well, for one, when institutions or government institutions may not solve the problems that a lot of people in the community need to solve, they do things themselves. So that community aspect that we're talking about. So, you know, we spoke to people like people in charge of Freedom Community Center or Action St. Louis or Close the Workhouse. I mean, those were all grassroots organizations and campaigns. Even people who were trying to figure out their own ways of to how to have like different protections in their car or ways to identify yourself if a police officer comes through. I mean, these are just all individuals really who are out there making different types of changes that they saw that they needed to change. And then the other thing too is that, and I think Kayla Reed said this in one of the episodes too, but like, progress is not linear in a lot of ways. So, you know, a lot of people may be fighting for a certain cause, or they may be trying to make a certain change, and it may not be, you know, an upward trajectory as many may hope for. It kind of goes up and down.
Mm-hmm. This idea about generational change, how have you seen that in action, in progress? Through the reporting that you've done, and again, through the work that you did on that We Live Here special miniseries.
It is a lot of younger people who have taken the mantle to try to make a lot of these changes. So even someone who is in like elected office, like Rasheen Aldridge, who was a part of the Ferguson Commission in 2015, became a state rep and is now a Board of Aldermen member. You have people who had run for office directly from that incident, Cori Bush as well. There are a lot of different people who kind of came out of that. So this idea of like generational change, I think really did spark from Ferguson, from the killing of Mike Brown. And then you've started to see a different generation like within the St. Louis region kind of come on and take a lot of these challenges.
Mm-hmm. 10 years is a very arbitrary number.
Yeah.
I mean, there was the 5-year anniversary, then there's the 10-year anniversary. Why, from a journalist's point of view, is it important to maintain a certain amount of focus on the Ferguson Commission, on the commission report?
I think it goes back to a lot of just accountability questions. So, yeah, it is an arbitrary number, 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20, whatever. But at the same time, even if you're looking and you don't expect, you know, a seismic shift in policies, or you don't expect, you know, a lot of changes, you at the very least kind of have a marker of, okay, well, so-and-so said that this was going to happen by then, or, you know, maybe people wanted this to happen by then. Are those people upset? Are those people happy? You know, just kind of using those years as time markers to, mm-hmm. to find that accountability.
And as we close this week, Chad, in just a couple of days, you're going to be reporting on something that is very relevant to today's conversation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so there's going to be a town hall, a virtual town hall on the Ferguson consent decree. So this was you know, something that was set up by the Department of Justice back in 2015 about some of the things that Ferguson needed to change. It was a court order. And so there has been funding. I think maybe 4 out of the 7 Ferguson council members had voted to cut the funding or slash it of that. So there's a lot of people who, you know, have been upset by that. And there's going to be a town hall, a virtual one on that. So I'll be following that closely. Mm-hmm.
And we'll look forward to seeing what the reporting is out of that. Chad Davis is a reporter for St. Louis Public Radio and host of the special mini season of We Live Here. Thank you again, Chad, for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
This episode was produced by Elaine Cha.
Our audio engineer is Aaron Dorr. This podcast was mixed and edited by Aaron.
Our executive producer is Alex Hoyer.
St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio. Understanding starts here.
Do you find yourself regularly listening to episodes of St. Louis on the Air? Suggest us to a friend you think might enjoy our conversations. And leave us a review and rating on Apple Podcasts on the App Store. It's the simplest way to help people discover our show. Thanks.
St. Louis Public Radio is a member-supported service of the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
The Gateway brings you the day's news each weekday from around the St. Louis region and the state capitals in Jefferson City.
Our schools are accredited. We don't need this bill.
And Springfield.
How many more years must pass before lawmakers see Time is of the essence.
I'm Abby Larico. Join me each weekday for The Gateway on the STLPR app or wherever you get podcasts.